Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, May 25th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, NWS, Storms Produce Hail, Tornado. Baseball-sized hail, gusts up to 80 miles per hour reported during Tuesday's activity. By Stuart Doreen. Storms delivered rain, hail, wind gusts of 80 miles per hour, and even a tornado to Midland and the surrounding counties on Tuesday. The National Weather Service, on its Facebook page, reported a severe storm passing over parts of Midland during the first round of showers to hit the city prior to 6 p.m. The Post also stated, "This is a very dangerous storm, with reports of baseball-sized hail or larger." In that round, rain totals of 1/2 inch were reported in northwest Midland in less than an hour. The National Weather Service reported this weekend that 0.57 inch of rain has fallen since September 1st. Tornadic activity. That storm produced tornadic activity as it moved east out of Midland and into Glasscock County. The NWS reported the storm will contain wind gusts up to 80 miles per hour and baseball-size hail. By 6:38 p.m., the NWS on its social media reported, "Emergency managers have reported a tornado on the ground. This storm continues along State Highway 158 and is moving into Sterling County." By 6:55 p.m., the National Weather Service office in Midland reported a flood advisory for Glasscock, Martin, and Midland counties until 10 p.m. The impact. The National Weather Service reported 0.11 inch of rain fell at Midland International as of its 6:53 p.m. report, and 0.02 inch fell prior to 2 p.m. The showers from the two waves of storm during the early evening that had produced nearly 0.6 inch in northwest Midland had basically missed the NWS office. What remained after most of the moisture had exited the area were winds that reached 38 miles per hour sustained and 51 mile per hour gusts at Midland International, and 40 miles per hour sustained and 51 mile per hour gusts at Air Park, according to the National Weather Service. Whatever moisture Midlanders received will have a chance to soak into the ground before high temperatures again are expected to top 100 degrees this weekend. This article is entitled, Anderson Outpaces Prude in Race for Precinct 4. She garnered almost 750 more votes than opponent en route to securing her seat. By Stuart Doreen. Diane Anderson will become a county commissioner. Anderson handily defeated Randy Prude, 1,506 to 761, to become the Republican nominee for the Precinct 4 seat on the Midland County Commissioner's Court. There is no Democrat on the ballot in November, so Anderson will represent Precinct 4, which includes part of Central and Northwest Midland, in January. Anderson had collected the most votes in the three-person March 1st primary. The third-place finisher, Charles Hall, endorsed Anderson in the runoff. The win is expected to help Terry Johnson as he goes into a second term as county judge. Prude represented an ally of former county judge Mike Bradford, and he appeared on the opposite side of 3-2 votes. With wins by Anderson in Precinct 4 and Jeff Summers in Precinct 2, Johnson appears to have more support when items come before the court, including the horseshoe operations contract that is expected to come back in Johnson's second term. The contract was a big part of Anderson's grassroots campaign. Anderson said, after her primary victory, that she knocked on more than 2,000 doors during her return to politics. The former Midland ISD school board member said there were issues like roads and water that are important to Precinct 4 residents, but the Horseshoe Complex was the number one topic. The thing that resounded with voters was having a new contract with the Horseshoe in 2023 that favors the county, Anderson said previously. Interestingly, Summers won his two-person matchup, collecting 64% of the vote. Anderson topped that total, collecting 66.4% of the vote in a one-on-one matchup with Prude, just short of two-thirds of the total votes. Other results inside Midland County included Ken Paxton getting more Midland support than George P. Bush in the GOP's Attorney General race, 3,916 to 1,466. Wayne Christian more than doubling up the vote total of Sarah Stogner in the RRC race, 3,616 to 1,616. Don Buckingham having no problems against Tim Westley, 3,273 to 1,678. Mike Collier collected 278 votes compared to Michelle Beckley's 197 in the Democrats' runoff for lieutenant governor. Rochelle Mercedes Garza distancing herself from Joe Jaworski, 306 to 163. Janet Dudding collecting more votes than Angel Luis Vega, 280 to 181. Sandra Grace Martinez beating Jay Kleberg in Midland, 255 to 210. Republicans in Midland County casting 5,413 votes, Democrats 480. Voter turnout of 6.19%. This article is entitled, At Least 18 Children Die in School Shooting in Uvalde. Gunman also dead after worst killing of its kind in state's history. By Eugene Garcia and Dario Lopez Mills, Associated Press. Uvalde. An 18-year-old gunman opened fire Tuesday at a Texas elementary school, killing at least 18 children as he went from classroom to classroom, officials said. In the latest gruesome moment for a country scarred by a string of massacres. The attacker was killed by law enforcement. The death toll also included three adults, according to State Senator Roland Gutierrez, who said he had been briefed by state police. But it was not immediately clear whether that number included the attacker or how many people were wounded. The massacre at Robb Elementary School in the heavily Latino town of Uvalde was the deadliest shooting at a U.S. grade school since a gunman killed 20 children and 6 adults at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut, almost a decade ago. My heart is broken today, said Hal Harrell, the school district superintendent, announcing that all school activities were canceled until further notice. We're a small community, and we're going to need your prayers to get through this. The attack also came just 10 days after a deadly racist rampage at a Buffalo, New York supermarket that added to a years-long series of mass killings at churches, schools, and stores. And the prospects for any reform of the nation's gun regulations seemed as dim as in the aftermath of the Sandy Hook deaths. President Joe Biden appeared ready for a fight and called for new gun restrictions in an address to the nation hours after the attack. As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name are we going to do what has to be done? Biden asked. Why are we willing to live with this carnage? Many of the injured were rushed to Uvalde Memorial Hospital, where staff members in scrubs and devastated victims' relatives could be seen weeping as they walked out of the complex. The gunman, who was wearing body armor, crashed his car outside the school before going inside, Sergeant Eric Estrada of the Texas Department of Public Safety told CNN. He killed his grandmother before heading to the school with two military-style rifles he had purchased on his birthday, Gutierrez said. That was the first thing he did on his 18th birthday, he said. Officials did not immediately reveal a motive, but the governor identified the assailant as Salvador Ramos and said he was a resident of the community about 85 miles west of San Antonio. Ramos had hinted on social media that an attack could be coming, Gutierrez said, noting that he suggested the kids should watch out. A Border Patrol agent who was working nearby when the shooting began rushed into the school without waiting for backup and shot and killed the gunman who was behind a barricade, according to a law enforcement official speaking on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to talk about it. The agent was wounded but able to walk out of the school, the law enforcement source said. The school district's police chief, Pete Arredondo, said that the attacker acted alone. It was not immediately clear how many people were wounded, but Arredondo said there were several injuries. Earlier, Uvalde Memorial Hospital said 13 children were taken there. Another hospital reported a 66-year-old woman was in critical condition. Robb Elementary School has an enrollment of just under 600 students, and Arredondo said it serves students in the second, third, and fourth grades. He did not provide ages of the children who were shot. This was the school's last week of classes before summer break. Heavily armed law enforcement officers swarmed to the school, with officers in tactical vests directing traffic and FBI agents coming and going from the building. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said President Joe Biden was briefed on the shooting on Air Force One as he returned from a 5-day trip to Asia. Uvalde, home to about 16,000 people, is about 75 miles from the border with Mexico. Robb Elementary is in a mostly residential neighborhood of modest homes. The tragedy in Uvalde was the deadliest school shooting in Texas history, and added to a grim tally of mass shootings in the state that has been among the deadliest in the U.S. over the past 5 years. In 2018, a gunman fatally shot 10 people at Santa Fe High School in the Houston area. A year before that, a gunman at a Texas church killed more than 24 people during a Sunday service in the small town of Sutherland Springs. In 2019, another gunman at a Walmart in El Paso killed 23 people in a racist attack. The shooting came days before the National Rifle Association annual convention was set to begin in Houston. Abbott and both of Texas's U.S. senators were among elected Republican officials who were the scheduled speakers at a Friday leadership forum sponsored by the NRA's lobbying arm. In the years since Sandy Hook, the gun control debate in Congress has waxed and waned. Efforts by lawmakers to change U.S. gun policies in any significant way have consistently faced roadblocks from Republicans and the influence of outside groups such as the NRA. A year after Sandy Hook, Senators Joe Manchin, a West Virginia Democrat, and Patrick J. Toomey, a Pennsylvania Republican, negotiated a bipartisan proposal to expand the nation's background check system. But as the measure was close to being brought to the Senate floor for a vote, it became clear it would not get enough votes to clear a 60-vote filibuster hurdle. Last year, the House passed two bills to expand background checks on firearms purchases. One bill would have closed a loophole for private and online sales. The other would have extended the background check review period. Both languished in the 50-50 Senate, where Democrats need at least 10 Republican votes to overcome objections from a filibuster. This article is entitled "Midland Wins Award for Wastewater Upgrades" by Mella McEwen. Midland and Pioneer Natural Resources' unique private partnership to upgrade the city's wastewater treatment plant has earned it the Governor's Environmental Excellence Award for Water Conservation from the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. In its application for the award, the City of Midland described issuing a request for proposals for the existing wastewater plant upgrades in March 2014, specifically related to water use for the oil and gas industry. Pioneer Natural Resources was chosen to provide the upgrades and use the treated wastewater. Under a contract signed by city officials and Pioneer, Pioneer invested $125 million for the upgrades. Total cost was $133.5 million, with the city contributing $4.25 million in funds and $9.25 million in water credits. After approval by the Texas Senate, Pioneer received exclusive rights to reuse the water. The project was completed in March 2021. According to the application, the complete facility can currently treat for reuse up to 15 million gallons per day, or 357,142 barrels per day for oil and gas industry reuse. Pioneer currently uses the majority of the plant flow, approximately 10 million gallons per day, and projects continued usage, allowing the company to cease sourcing groundwater for its operations and conserve fresh water, saving an estimated 30 acre-feet of water per day, while allowing the city to make necessary infrastructure upgrades. With the upgrades, Midland went from strictly mechanical treatment to a biological system. The partnership allowed the city to stop land applications of sludge and effluent, as it had done for 50 years, thus improving groundwater quality. In its application, the city said it believes the public-private partnership between Pioneer and the city serves as a model of how private industry can help finance needed upgrades in aging infrastructure. This is the obituary column. Wednesday, May 25th. Gary Lindley Hawkins. Gary Lindley Hawkins, age 81, of Midland, passed away peacefully after a short battle with cancer on May 19th. Gary was born in Orange, California on September 13, 1940. Gary Hawkins is survived by his wife, Jana Brantley Hawkins, children Gary Lindley Hawkins, Guy Leeson Hawkins, Garrett Lee Hawkins, Christy Lynn McCarthy, several grandchildren, and one great-grandchild. Private celebration of life for family members and close friends will be held from 5:30 to 8 p.m. May 27th. In lieu of flowers, the family asks for donations to St. Jude's. J.N. Bob Cotton. J.N. Bob Cotton, a young 93, died at his home in Midland on May 17th with his family at his side. Bob was born to Andrew Madison Cotton and Iva Reeves Cotton in McLean County, Oklahoma, on March 27, 1929. Bob married the love of his life, Anna Margaret Brown, in 1950, and they had two children, Cheryl and Keith. In 1993, Bob married Virginia Shankle, whom he had met through hospice grief meetings. Bob was preceded in death by his parents, Andrew and Iva Cotton, wife Anna Cotton, son Keith Evan Cotton, brothers Lester Cotton and Hobart Cotton, sisters Daisy Wagoner and Hazel Leisure. Bob is survived by his spouse Virginia, as well as his devoted family, Cheryl Kuzmich of Fort Worth and Sonia Martin of Greenwood. He had five grandchildren and three great-grandchildren. Bob's wishes were to have no services, but to be cremated and placed with his wife Anna in Montague County, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Johnny Hodges. Johnny Mac Hodges left us to be with our Lord and Savior on May 21st at the age of 67, surrounded by his family. Johnny was born on August 3, 1954, to Jack and Melba Hodges of Midland. In 1974, Johnny married his high school sweetheart, Carla Friday Hodges. Those left to cherish Johnny's love and memories are his wife, Carla Hodges, his daughter and son-in-law, Amanda and Daniel Fife, his daughter and son-in-law, Katie and Aaron Stevens, all of Midland, his sister and brother-in-law, Melinda and Michael Murphy of Gardendale, as well as several grandchildren, and numerous extended family and friends. He was preceded in death by his son Brandon Hodges and his parents Jack and Melba Hodges. The family will receive friends from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 25th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Services are scheduled for 11 a.m. on Thursday, May 26th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with pastors Johnny Paredes and Tony Connor officiating. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Condolences may be sent to the family at www.npwelch.com. Joni L. Russell. Joni L. Russell, 68, of Belafonte, passed away on Friday, May 13th at Center Care. Born on January 6, 1954, in Belafonte, she was the daughter of the late Marlon Rhodes, late Carmen Russell, and Ann Torsell Lucas. In addition to her mother, Ann, she is survived by her two sons and their wives, Greg Bird, Stacy of Traverse City, Michigan, Keith Russell Brittany of Belafonte, as well as one grandchild and two step-grandchildren. Also surviving are her siblings, Susan Fenstermacher, Carl of Belafonte, Deandra Rhodes Welch, Scott of Midland, Joseph Russell, Linda of Belafonte, Daphne Rhodes of Midland, Denise Martin Barry of Belafonte, Doreen Noyen, Nee of Midland, and Marlene Butch Schneider of Baker City, Oregon. Friends will be received on Friday, May 27th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Faith United Methodist Church, 512 Hughes Street, Belafonte. Funeral services will begin at 12 p.m. Burial will immediately follow at St. John's Catholic Cemetery in Belafonte. Arrangements are under the direction of Wetzler Funeral Service in Belafonte. In lieu of flowers, contributions may be made to Faith United Methodist Church or to Center Care. Willie A. Goudeau. Willie A. Goudeau peacefully passed away in his home on May 22nd. Willie was born January 28, 1922, in Goudeau, Louisiana. He was the son of Willie F. and Effie Maxwell Goudeau. Willie was preceded in death by his loving wife Marguerite, his son Ronald Eugene Goudeau, and his brother Philip. He leaves three sons, William Glenn Goudeau and wife Peggy of Mount Pleasant, Timothy Allen Goudeau and wife Marion of Midland, John Nathan Goudeau and wife Sherry of Colorado Springs, Colorado. He also leaves two daughters, Antoinette Goudeau Nichols and husband Dale of Lecanto, Florida, and Anita Renee Goudeau of Midland. He also leaves nine grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. The family will receive friends from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, May 26th at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Memorial services are scheduled for 11 a.m. Friday, May 27th at Golf Course Road Church of Christ. Private family burial will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park. No flowers, please. Any monetary gifts may be made to the Missions Ministry at Golf Course Road Church of Christ and or Hospice of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Miguel Angel Agüero Jr. Miguel Angel Agüero Jr., 31 of Midland, passed away May 21st. Visitation will be held on Wednesday, May 25th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home from 9 a.m. until 8 p.m., with a rosary service starting at 7 p.m. Funeral service will be held on Thursday, May 26th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine Catholic Church at 2 p.m. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, May 25th. NTO Top 2 Striving for the Top. This edition of George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa's top 10 students have overcome a lot of obstacles with a pandemic being one of the big issues. Principal Gerardo Ramirez said they were there for the regular school year as freshmen, but COVID hit during their sophomore and junior year. This year, they're having somewhat normal type of school year, so I think they've overcome a lot of challenges, a lot of obstacles. We're very proud of them, Ramirez said. 9 out of the top 10 are young women and 1 is male. Ramirez said it just worked out that way. He added that this is a very committed and strong group of students. The valedictorian is 18-year-old Isabella Fanucci-Dishon, and the salutatorian is 17-year-old Emily Banda. We're excited. Our graduation is scheduled for Wednesday, May the 25th at 7 p.m. at the Wagner Newell Performing Arts Center. So that's going to be our big day, big graduation, Ramirez said. Fanucci Dishon plans to attend the University of Texas at Austin and major in social work. I actually want to go to law school afterwards. I've always wanted to be a lawyer, but specifically a civil rights attorney. That was my kind of childhood dream. My mom is a social worker right now, Fanucci Dishon said. UT doesn't have a pre-law program necessarily, so this seemed like something that she could start off in, she said. Fanucci Dishon added that she watched her mother help a lot of people with her degree. She said being valedictorian is exciting, but everybody who is in her class works hard and pushes each other. I think we have a collective personality of sorts, so if it wasn't me, it would have been anybody. But I'm also excited because, obviously, it's fun to be up there, give a speech, and it's nice to represent a school that I love, Fanucci Dishon added. Asked if there was any competition between her and Banda, Fanucci Dishon said Banda is her best friend, and should have been just as happy, if not happier, if Banda was named valedictorian. She said she doesn't know if she had the goal of making the top 10, but ever since she learned what a grade was, she was determined to get the best one, just for herself. My mom was the valedictorian. You see this influence, and I just always want to do my best in school, Fanucci Dishon said. She added that the best advice she would have for younger students who want to be in the top 10 is that there are going to be times when you're not going to be on your A game. There are going to be times when you don't go home and do all the homework right away and get ahead. So just spend the time when you are motivated, using that to get ahead, and know that you took all this time during the quote-unquote right thing. You did the homework when you're supposed to. So when you're having those moments, don't feel guilty. Just take those moments and allow yourself to, and then just get back to your old self, Fanucci Dishon said. Banda said she is planning to attend Texas Tech University Honors College and major in biomedicine. She graduated with an associate degree in general studies from Odessa College. I hope to graduate with my bachelor's and then pursue physician's assistant program to specialize in pediatrics, Banda said. She added that she is honored to be salutatorian. It's been a dream since I was little, and the valedictorian is one of my best friends, so it's very bittersweet, Banda said. Banda has one sister who graduated from Texas Tech as well. She said she would advise younger students who want to be in the top 10 to work hard, be confident in themselves, and remember to find a balance in work and school and make sure to make time for themselves. Commissioners Prepare for Upcoming Budget by Royal McGregor. With inflation on the rise, the Ector County Commissioners Court is already looking ahead to the 2022-23 budget cycle. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes asked all Ector County elected officials and county departments to start putting together their requests, especially when it comes to vehicles and equipment. The current budget cycle will remain in effect until the end of September. I would ask if you try to at least get equipment and vehicle requests to us as soon as you can, so we can try to address that as a court, Hayes said during Tuesday's regularly scheduled Commissioners Court meeting. We can help you get what you need sooner and it not be on back order until 2024 or 2025. Hayes used the Ector County Sheriff's Office as an example, as it took the county's law enforcement agency a year and a half to receive its new patrol units. Don Stringer, the Ector County Commissioner for Precinct 3, said he hopes the county can be ahead of the curve when it comes to purchasing new vehicles and equipment. Anytime you are in an ordering cycle, you want to be the first one in, Stringer said. If we can get the department heads to go ahead and get on board and start going through preparing for the budget cycle and get us the wish list that they're going to need, the sooner we can get with purchasing and fulfill those desires. The way the county goes about purchasing vehicles and equipment might slightly change. Greg Simmons, the Ector County Commissioner for Precinct 2, said the county has looked at the bid numbers and typically chose the lowest bid. However, he said not only should the county look at the price, but how timely will those vehicles or equipment be awarded to the county. The key needs to be what's the cheapest one that can provide it in a certain time frame, Simmons said. The way we are bidding them might need to change this year. Just because somebody tells us that they can get it to us for this price, if they can't get it to us for 9 months or a year, the price doesn't really matter. Maybe the way we are bidding it needs to change to say within the next 90 days for delivery, what would be the prices. The county approved to table the revision on the anti-discrimination and harassment policy for Ector County. For about a little over an hour, the commissioners met in executive session. The only agenda item the commissioners took action on from executive session was to allow the elections office to fill a vacant position. Longtime Crockett teacher retires by Ruth Campbell. One of the longest-serving teachers in Ector County ISD is retiring this year. Mindy Mays has been at Crockett Middle School and only at Crockett for 45 years. She currently teaches 8th grade math and Algebra 1. A native of Kermit, Mays earned her bachelor's degree from West Texas State University, now West Texas A&M University, in Canyon. Surprisingly, Mays said teaching wasn't her initial aspiration. I was going to be a professional tennis player, and then my 8th grade math teacher is kind of the one that gave me the thought of teaching. My parents were both in education. Then I, in high school, I liked taking shorthand, and so I thought about being the court reporter. But then once I actually got down to it, education was where I wanted to be, and knew that's where I needed to be, Mays said. She observed that teaching has changed quite a bit over the years. Kids are still kids, but the way kids are at school and the way they treat teachers is a lot different. Math has always been a subject that's been tested, so the stress has always been there for that. But there's just so much testing now that makes it different. I guess ultimately, when you get in your classroom and teach, that's what it's all about, Mays said. Her passion for students, their learning, and helping them to become successful is what kept her going. It's easy to love them and show them that you care, and once you get that, then you can get their respect, and it makes all the difference as to how they treat you and how they want to learn, Mays said. She added that she has always said you're either a middle school teacher or you're not. You either love this age or you don't. If you don't, you don't need to be in middle school because they are ever changing. You never have 2 days that are the same. You never have 2 periods that are the same. You've got to be able to just flip on a dime with what you need to do if you see it's not working. Middle school has been my passion, I guess. This is where I should have been, so I've never left, Mays said. Having been at Crockett so long, she thinks of it as home. This is just where I love to be. We've had principals come and go. Students are now teachers that have come back, Mays said. She added that having former students return as teachers is very gratifying. Sandra Kerr is one of those students. She's not just a co-worker. She's not just a mentor. She's just not the legend of Crockett. She's a friend, Kerr said. She's synonymous, one and the same. Kerr co-teaches with Mays, and Mays was Kerr's 9th grade teacher. The middle schools were previously junior high schools and went from grades 6 through 9. The amazing thing is how she has so much knowledge, and yet she still gives me that opportunity to grow. She made me the leader that I am. She did. And if you ask her, I was a very quiet kid in school, Kerr said. She added that she never thought she would stand in front of a class or faculty. That still freaks me out. She's the one that pushes me, Kerr said. Kerr added that she gets scared that Mays is leaving, but like Mays told her, she's just a text away. Principal Maribel Aranda says Mays is the consummate teacher. Ms. Mays is the embodiment of what we want in a teacher: dedication to her students, dedication to her craft, and dedication to her school, Aranda said in a text message. Over the years, Mays has taught some of the parents of the current Crockett students. It just makes me feel blessed because I haven't had parents come back and tell me I was terrible. They usually have good things to say, and their kids have good things to say, that their parents have enjoyed being in class, and that I was a good teacher and that they learned from me. It's very nice being recognized for, I guess, longevity. But for still retaining my passion and having what it takes to make a good teacher, because if I wasn't successful and my kids weren't successful, I would have quit a long time ago, Mays said. I'm not the person that wants to hang around just so I can say, yeah, I taught 50 years or I taught 45. If I'm not doing a good job, then I'm leaving, she added. Mays isn't sure exactly what she'll do in retirement, and she's not sure it will hit here until she would be reporting back to work. I'm going to read some books and do some things that I've kind of put on the back shelf and enjoy my time, Mays said. Quick hints. COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR tests drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit Curative, curative.com. Family Bash. First United Methodist Church, 415 North Lee Avenue, has scheduled a family bash at 6 p.m. today in the Fellowship Center. To RSVP or for more information, call 432-337-1527 or visit fumcodessa.org. Clay Shoot Fundraiser. West Texas Food Bank has scheduled Aim to End Hunger Clay Shoot Fundraiser from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday at Midland Shooters Association, 7400 West County Road, 170 Midland. Sponsorships and team opportunities are available. To sponsor, register, or for more information, call 432-697-4003. Blood Drive. Vitalant has scheduled a blood drive from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday at YMCA, 3001 University Boulevard. To make an appointment, visit donors.vitalant, vitalant.org. Playtime at the Playa, I-20 Wildlife Preserve and Jenna Welch Nature Study Center, 2201 South Midland Drive. Midland has scheduled Playtime at the Playa from 10:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Thursday at Wild at the Preserve. Learners will develop their motor skills and advance their math and literacy by engaging in activities like food source identification and classifying the sun's energy levels. Wear clothes you're comfortable getting messy. Afterwards, take a walk around the preserve. Class sizes are limited. Registrations are required. To register, visit i20wp.org/education. CASA Lunch and Learn. CASA of West Texas, 1611 West Texas Avenue, Midland, has scheduled a lunch and learn from noon to 1 p.m. Thursday. Children in foster care are longing for a hero, a CASA volunteer. Lunch will be provided. Best Friends Animal Society offers safety tips for Memorial Day. Memorial Day weekend is the unofficial start to summer, which means barbecues, picnics, pool time, and more fun-in-the-sun activities. For pet owners, it also means taking precautions so the whole family can have an enjoyable and safe summer. Best Friends Animal Society, the leading animal welfare organization working to end the killing of dogs and cats in America's shelters by 2025, wants you and your pet to enjoy the start of summer safely by following the below tips. Alcohol and animals don't mix. A good rule of thumb is to keep alcoholic beverages out of sight and on high surfaces because alcohol, even in small amounts, can be poisonous to pets. No scraps about it. It's important to remind any house guests that table scraps and human snacks, including some BBQ staples like avocados, onions, and chicken bones, are toxic to pets and can be choking hazards. Instead, keep your pet treats on hand so your furry guests can enjoy the festivities without the risk. Pool etiquette. Some pooches love the pool, but it's important to remember not all dogs are expert swimmers. Never leave them unsupervised near any body of water, including pools, oceans, or lakes. Also, don't let your pet drink pool water. If chemicals such as chlorine are ingested in large amounts, it can cause irritation and vomiting. Hydration is key. Pets can get dehydrated quickly, so it's important to have plenty of fresh, clean water on hand. It's a great idea for pet parents to carry a collapsible water dish for rehydrating. And if you're spending time outdoors, make sure your pets always have access to a shady spot. Permian Basin MPO to hold public meetings. The Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization will be holding two public meetings as it's scheduled to discuss the interregional corridor study. The first meeting is set for 12 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. today at the Hispanic Cultural Center of Midland, located at 1311 East Wadley Avenue in Midland. Lunch will be provided. People are asked to RSVP to BO at maverickproductions.net. The second meeting is scheduled for 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. today at the Zant Community Room, located in the Odessa College Salisbury Campus Center building at 201 West University Boulevard in Odessa. MC to host electrical students. SkillPoint Alliance Permian Basin, a newly established nonprofit workforce development provider in West Texas and New Mexico, has announced that Midland College will host the first cohort of pre-apprentice electrical students. The class will be taught by SkillPoint Alliance instructor Brent Bacon and will run from June 6th through July 1st. SkillPoint Permian Basin offers rapid training programs in the electrical, plumbing, HVAC trades, among others, to the Permian Basin communities in West Texas and Southeast New Mexico. Applicants who successfully enroll in the program will prepare for work as entry-level electrical apprentices. Students learn about electrical safety, hand tools, power tools, and the differences between residential and commercial employment job functions. Some of the hands-on lessons include how to wire device boxes, bend conduit, and assemble raceways. Participants obtain their OSHA 10 certification during the program and will also receive assistance in obtaining their Texas Department of Licensing and Registration Electrical Apprentice License. People who are interested in applying for the pre-apprentice electrical program can visit skillpointalliance.org for more information. Married versus domestic partner with employer benefits and delaying Medicare Part B. Tony, my problem is different than most couples that I read about in your weekly Medicare column. I'm finding out that my company's group health plan is not paying for any Medicare Part B medical expense since my husband is really a domestic partner. We have been together for over 25 years but never officially married. Richard is 72 and I am a 58-year-old female who now needs to learn the maze of Medicare. Richard has serious health issues with two stents in his heart and a recent back surgery, which is now costing us thousands of dollars because my company's group health plan is not paying for his doctor's care. Richard has never enrolled in Medicare Part B because I've always been the working spouse. Now I am discovering that the group health plan, the company's self-administered group health plan, does not recognize domestic partners as a married couple because we do not have a marriage license. Now he needs to enroll in Medicare Part B, and with him being 72, if he does not do this correctly, the penalty will be over for 7 years. From what I have read in your articles, this could be 70 or 80% penalty forever. The bottom line is, we need help. Thank you, Gabby, Phoenix, Arizona. Gabby, enrolling in Medicare Part B needs to be a rush job. You are in the middle of the maze of Medicare, and Richard needs Medicare Part B immediately. This is a new Medicare question for the Tony Says Medicare office. America needs to know the rules of Medicare regarding delaying Medicare Part B when there is an unmarried domestic partner situation, same sex or opposite sex, and they receive health insurance through their partner's employer. Always discuss delaying your domestic partner's Medicare Part B with your company's health insurance benefits administrator or HR department about what is in the insurance company's handbook regarding unmarried domestic spouse Medicare rules. The size of the group may not make a difference. Whether there are less than or over 100 employees on your unmarried spouse's group health insurance plan, one should verify with HR or the insurance plan if you generally should not delay the non-working domestic partner's Medicare Part B. As I said earlier in this article, always consult with your benefits or HR department about the consequences that may arise when your domestic partner delays their Medicare Part B, and if there could be a possibility of receiving a late Part B penalty when they need to enroll in Medicare Part B at a later date. I have written about the special enrollment period and having the Social Security form titled CMS L-564, Request for Employment Information, filled out by your HR or office manager. Richard could have his Medicare Part B with an effective date of the first of the next month. Richard will need to take two Social Security forms, the CMS L-564, Request for Employment Information, signed by the employer's HR department along with the CMS 40B, Application for Medicare Part B, to his local Social Security office. During a Tony Says Medicare consultation, we advise clients to meet with a Social Security rep in person, if possible due to COVID-19 social distancing, or fax it directly to the specific office, or leave in the Social Security office's mail drop box. Remember, always make copies of every document given to the Social Security office or received from the Social Security office. Sign up for the Tony Says Medicare newsletter about Medicare rules and changes at www.tonysays.com. Tony King, author of the 2022 Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition, is giving a $5 discount on the Medicare Survival Guide Advanced book at www.tonysays.com. ECISD School Nutrition offering summer meals. This summer, ECISD School Nutrition will connect children 18 and younger and enrolled students with disabilities up to 21 years old with healthy, no-cost summer meals. The Summer Food Service Program is a U.S. Department of Agriculture nutrition program administered in the Lone Star State by the Texas Department of Agriculture. For the children who rely on school meals during the academic year, these meals offer a source of good nutrition when school is out for the long summer vacation. Odessa children need good nutrition year-round so they can learn, grow, and succeed in life, said Huyen Pando, school nutrition director. With nearly 2 million food-insecure children living in Texas, these healthy meals are vital to nourishing young Texans during the summer vacation. Dates and times vary for each site. For more information, contact ECISD School Nutrition at 432-456-9749. ECISD School Nutrition is one of the nonprofit organizations partnering with TDA to serve meals across Texas. Families are encouraged to use these three tools to find a meal site anywhere in the state. Call 211 to speak to a live operator. Visit www.summerfood.org for an interactive site locator map. Text food or comida, COMIDA, to 304-304. Organizations partner with TDA to serve meals in areas where more than 50% of children are eligible for free or reduced-price meals in the National School Lunch Program. Eligible sponsoring organizations include schools, faith-based groups, nonprofit summer camps, government agencies, and other tax-exempt organizations. All meal sites must be sponsored by an organization that has a contract with TDA. Summer meal sites help children succeed by providing the nourishment they need to return to school in the fall ready to thrive. Sex assault trial enters day two. Editor's note: this story contains graphic descriptions of child sexual abuse by Kim Smith. Jurors who will decide the fate of an Odessa man accused of sexually assaulting a toddler heard from the lead investigator on the case Tuesday, the second day of his trial. Fabian Andres Ortega, 24, was arrested 2 years ago after Fern Garcia of Del Rio told authorities that Ortega told her via texts and video chats he'd been having a young relative perform oral sex on him, and he planned to allow other men to use her for their sexual pleasure. Garcia testified Monday that because Snapchat deletes conversations and videos within 24 hours, she began taking photos of them with her tablet so she could share them with authorities. Among the evidence she gathered was a picture of the bottom portion of a young girl's face. Garcia testified Ortega told her the picture was an image of a one-year-old relative. Ector County Sheriff's Office investigator Heidi Zavala told jurors she began investigating Ortega in September 2020 after receiving a call from the victim's mother. The Del Rio Police Department, FBI, and Child Protective Services had already launched an investigation, but she took it over for them, she said. Zavala testified she conducted a search of Ortega's bedroom at his parents' house in the hopes of finding his cell phone, but was unsuccessful. His father, Andres, however, told her he had deleted sexually explicit photos from that phone, she said. Zavala also told jurors she had a forensic interviewer sit down with a child, but it was unhelpful because the child, who was actually two at the time, couldn't speak complete sentences. She then went to Del Rio to speak with Garcia, collect her phone and tablet, and have her look at a photo lineup. Garcia identified Ortega as the man she'd met on Tinder, had one sexual encounter with, and had been video chatting and texting with, Zavala said. Under cross-examination from defense attorney Jason Leach, Zavala admitted she didn't follow up with Verizon when they failed to respond to a subpoena for Ortega's phone records, nor did she try to subpoena Snapchat records. Zavala told Leach she didn't know how to do that at the time. She also acknowledged she didn't seek any help to figure out how Snapchat works, despite the fact she was unfamiliar with the app and needed to know if someone else could have been using Ortega's username and pretending to be him. Zavala also admitted to Leach she falsely told the judge, who signed Ortega's arrest warrant and the search warrant for his bedroom, that the girl had told authorities she had been sexually assaulted. She further admitted that her report is missing key information, such as when Ortega had access to the girl, or if the girl's mother positively identified the girl as the one in the photo. She initially said other deputies had the details as far as Ortega's access to the girl, but had to admit those details weren't in their reports when she was asked to review those reports as she sat on the stand. Zavala told Assistant Ector County District Attorney William Prasher she could not find any images on the Internet matching the photo supplied by Garcia, but under cross-examination from Leach, admitted she's received no training on how to conduct reverse image searches, nor does she know how to run facial recognition software, Zavala told Leach. The state also called Ortega's father, Andres Ortega, to the stand Tuesday. Andres Ortega denied telling Zavala that he had deleted sexually explicit pictures from his son's phone. He said that at least a year before his son's arrest, he told Fabian to delete nude photos of Fabian's girlfriend from the phone. Andres Ortega also testified his son was never alone with the child at the heart of the case. Judge John Schrode of the 358th District Court is presiding over the trial.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.